You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. We are at the part of the year where it will mostly be basketball. We have one football note to touch on first, though. The Heisman was given out over the weekend, as it often is. Jaden Daniels wins it, quarterback for LSU. This is something that we had talked about during the season, kind of almost hoping that he would win the award, even though his team was not doing particularly well.
Right.
I am at the point now, because of recent developments in the college football world, I could approach this from one of two ways, but let's start with the glass half full version, or outlook, what have you. He was the best player in the country this year, regardless of how bad his defense was. Do you still agree?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
That's mostly kind of what we were building towards. You know, we had seen a lot of guys over the years have great statistical seasons, which seems to be what the spirit of the award is. So by that metric, Jaden Daniels deserves to win the Heisman, but, we gotta do a little tinfoil hat time, or at least I do, because just as a fun little thought experiment, if the statistical seasons and team records of Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix were switched, I could see a world where Jaden Daniels still wins this award.
Yeah.
Is that valid?
I think it is. I think, as we've talked about, kind of the name brand of the school that you're at matters in a lot of awards like this. And the storyline around it, if LSU is having this magical season, you know, under Brian Kelly, and all of a sudden are in a playoff race and he has Michael Penix numbers, he's probably winning the Heisman. And that's just the way it's going to be. I don't know what it'll take to change that. Maybe it'll take a non-quarterback to have a monster year so that we really have to evaluate, like, it's been a quarterback for a long time. You know, we've had recent wide receivers win, but like, at what point can we point to consistently rewarding like these top skill position players? Like, yeah, and at this rate, it's never going to be a running back again, right?
Right. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, somebody like Cody Schrader this year would have had to, like, if he just, I don't even know, like another 15-20% higher his statistical output across the board, maybe start having that conversation. But that's just the way football is going. You know, it's a very, very pass heavy sport now. And, you know, there was a wide receiver who won,
like Ollie Gordon, 1600 yeah. yards and 20 touchdowns, not even in the conversation. He averaged 6.3 yards a carry.
Yeah.
And Schrader, 1489, 13 touchdowns.
Ollie Gordon is leaving now too. You don't even really get to appreciate that season too much. But that was something that just collateral damage from Alabama getting in over Florida State. Just have to look at these things a little closer. In a perfect world, an undefeated Florida State gets in. Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman on his merits. So maybe this is unfair to even bring up because he did have a very, very good season, but I am forever jaded. So just had to throw that out there potentially. But I think this season, hard to complain with who the finalists were. And even if you want to say, you know, Marvin Harrison's stats weren't as amazing, anytime you're watching Ohio State on a Saturday this season, you kind of knew he was the best player on the field pretty much every week. And, you know, he can't throw and catch the ball.
Right. It's a testament to him to even have 67 catches for 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns, given Kyle McCord was his quarterback. And that's not a slight against Kyle McCord. It's just a fact of the matter. Like, he did not play well this year, and it cost Ohio State in the biggest moment.
Yeah. I mean, Marvin Harrison was essentially a no-show against a very bad secondary in their very first game, Indiana, because Ohio State just did not throw the ball. I think he only had, like, three catches for 20 yards or something. Like, you know, two catches for 18. Sorry. And I, you know, over the course of the season, saw giving up like 600 felt like yards to Illinois' backup quarterback. There's definitely opportunity there for some stat padding, but right. Either way, the Ohio State defense was just too good to allow that this year. But congrats to Jaden Daniels. Well-deserved. Was an outstanding season. You almost hope that he had better support from the rest of the roster. But, you know, there's always next year, I suppose, for Brian Kelly.
There is.
On to basketball. Pretty big weekend. We've got another big weekend coming up of top matchups, trying to kind of see some separation. One of the things I saw that was lovely to see, you know, the last however many years, what was it now? I don't have the stat in front of me. I don't know if you saw this, but the week six AP poll, the top 12 for the last however many years, one of those teams has won the national championship. So I was happy to see my future, the Tennessee Volunteers, just barely snuck in there. But my first winner of the week has to be Arizona. Just the number one team with good reason. Tommy Lloyd in the regular season is the best coach in the country. The tournament, we're still waiting to kind of see some things get ironed out. But every year, Arizona just seems to start on an absolute tear. And really, you know, thanks in part to the Pac-12 not being super, they're able to continue it for most of the season. But they had a big matchup at home against a Wisconsin team that had started slow but was playing some really good basketball coming in. And this was about as non-competitive a game as you could find. Just shooting nearly 60% from the floor, 12 three-pointers, just everybody on Arizona hitting shots. Pell Larson with a very efficient 21 points. They are a problem again. And you know, they like a lot of teams lost a lot. It was kind of a question mark. So we've talked about Caleb Love coming in. He has his merits. He has things that people can be concerned about, but so far within this Arizona team, he seems to be fitting in very well. And the offense from last year does not really seem to have skipped a beat.
Yeah, they're a ton of fun to watch. I think to go along with what you're talking about, Tommy Lloyd, as is you know, a great regular season coach. It's very interesting because the guys like the late Jim Boeheim, I know he's not dead, but he's retired and out of the game, so we'll say that for him. And then Tom Izzo are like the guys that turn it on come March or late February, March, and then all of a sudden. You find their team in the Sweet 16 with absolutely no reason to be. They are the absolute opposites of each other at this point. Tommy Lloyd, until he can figure out getting past Princeton or getting past the early round opponent in the NCAA tournament, really needs to flip the script. But for now, he has a framework to build on. He has a lot of film to show his guys and show just how damn good they are. 98 points against a very solid Wisconsin team is nothing to sneeze at. They had, like you said, a balanced scoring attack, five guys in double figures, and it really was never too close. They are a very hard team to guard, just period. Like, when they're firing on all cylinders like this, all five guys are scorers. Even Umar Bello, who is really more of a back to the basket big, becomes that much more dangerous.
Yeah, and that game on Saturday is the ultimate clash of styles because, you know, it is nearly impossible to dictate pace against a Wisconsin, but that's exactly what Arizona did. Nearly got 100 points. They were pushing it at every opportunity, just making Wisconsin uncomfortable and unable to really settle into the type of game that they like to play. And that's, if you can dictate pace against Wisconsin, you can get anybody to play your game. So far, so good. I did find the stat I was trying to remember. So since 2004, in week six of the AP poll, one of the top 12 has won the title. So if we look at who's in there right now, you know, you've got some familiar faces: Arizona, Kansas, Purdue, Houston, UConn. All teams we thought would be up there. Baylor, Marquette, Creighton can say the same. North Carolina, Gonzaga, Tennessee have had some hiccups, but at their best, you know, you could see them being in the conversation. And then there's Oklahoma, who this was a team I kind of thought was a bit of a prove it year for Porter Moser. Hadn't really done much since he got the big step up in paycheck and weight class going to the Big 12. But so far, Oklahoma undefeated and just had a very impressive week. Blew out Providence, who had earlier this season blew out Wisconsin. Took down Arkansas. I know Arkansas has had its struggles, but that's still a needle-moving win for a school like Oklahoma. And this looks more like a Porter Moser-type team. You know, not turning the ball over a ton. They are very sound defensively, top 15 in KenPom. And they've got a lot of guys who can hurt you. And it's taken a couple of years. And, you know, maybe this is the high watermark of the season, but so far, Oklahoma looks very much for real and looks like they will be a challenge to what is always a very deep Big 12.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on prove it year for Porter Moser. I did not expect much out of them. I thought this was going to be the end of a regime that I could kind of prance around and say, look, I told you so. He was not going to work out there. It just didn't make a ton of sense. Not Mike Anderson to St. John's, no sense, but certainly close to that. But they are playing good basketball. If I can be the pessimist right now or the glass half empty guy, who have they really beaten? Like Providence is a solid win. USC is not playing good basketball. Arkansas, again, not playing good basketball. Outside of that, they beat an Iowa team that's average at best. Their prove-it game comes against North Carolina in, 8 days after we record this. That's their opportunity to show us if they are for real. And if they can win that game, then I will start believing in this Oklahoma team. That said, they've given themselves such a nice cushion, built themselves such grace amongst just the AP voters and college basketball fans alike that they maybe have to go 500 in Big 12 to make the tournament. And even that, like you look at that, that's not a terrible season by any stretch of the imagination just because of how solid the league is top to bottom. But it feels like one of those teams that gets out to this hot start because they're playing teams at the right time and coming away with nice wins. And then all of a sudden they come into conference play and they start stumbling. Would that be the case? I'm not 100% sure, but it wouldn't surprise me completely. The big surprise, though, is Otega Owe, the sophomore who Seton Hall swung and missed on so hard. Should have had that kid. Shooting 70% from the floor, 82% from three, 72% from the free throw line. He does a little bit of everything, rebounds the ball, moves in on offense, and then averaging almost two steals a game. He is an absolute stud and such a big piece for this Oklahoma team, and he's only going to keep getting better.
Yeah, almost half their wins are over high major opponents. But, you know, you kind of peel back the onion a little bit. Barely got by USC, who just lost to Long Beach State. You know, is struggled after a good start to the year. Iowa is, I don't think they'll be very good this year. But I've said that before. But yeah, they're getting good production out of Owe. John Hughley from Pitt has kind of come back into his own, more the player he was 2 years ago. But it's going to be tough from here on out because you look amongst their peers, and to your point, the only team that has had kind of an easier schedule out of that group so far would be UConn. But Oklahoma is not much ahead of them. But yeah, I mean, it was just a couple of years ago. I think it was his first year where they were almost 500 near the end of the year, and they were still getting talked about in like first four out. It's like you win.
They're like 6-11 in Big 12 play, and they're still in the conversation.
But you beat the teams you should. You pick off a couple, you know, like a Kansas, or I mean, you'll have a ton of opportunities this year now, especially that Houston's in there. But right. And BYU with a good start to the season, so there's going to be a lot of opportunities if they can kind of find some momentum with this awesome start to the non-conference. They didn't take any losses at all, but certainly no losses that will really hurt your resume. It's like, you know, it's three very, very winnable games, and then North Carolina next week, and that's your non-conference schedule. So 12-1 or 13-0 going into Big 12 play, you are set up for success, because that record is going to get condensed very quickly. But if you can just stay above water, this, I would say, looks like a tournament team.
Yeah, I would agree.
Probably not a national champion, but they are in the running officially.
They are.
According to the statistics. So there is that.
Yeah.
Who did you have as a winner?
I'm going to give St. Joe's a shout out. We talked about them beating Villanova. They have a couple other Philly wins over Penn and Temple. They hung tough with Kentucky in a game earlier in the year, and then they beat previously unbeaten Princeton this past week in a really fun game. They're 8-2. They're a lot of fun to watch, and they are certainly a contender in this Atlantic 10. I think the top of the league is going to be really fun. I really am worried about the bottom of the league. I don't think it's back to the level that we have seen the A-10 normally at over the last decade plus. I just think there's a lot to be desired from those bottom teams, but the top of the league, the St. Joe's, the Dayton's, the Duquesne teams, you know, those are very solid programs, very solid teams this year that have played really good competition and have some solid wins. So continuing to watch what this St. Joe's team does, what the A-10 race looks like, and then just how they continue to play offensively as they've been pretty darn solid with Eric Reynolds and Xavier Brown.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing really good basketball. And, like, again, if they don't lose to Texas A&M Commerce, I mean, they still could bounce back from that. But if they don't lose that game, this is a team that's looking great to potentially be an at-large team. Especially, you know, even if they still suffer the same results at Kentucky, but that was a game that they very much could have won. You know, some would argue should have, but they are a ton of fun to watch. Obviously, Princeton was playing very good basketball of their own coming in, but yeah, it's did a very good job of limiting what Caden Pierce was able to do, who's having a phenomenal start to his sophomore season for the Tigers. And yeah, I mean, they are a big make shots team. Very fun to watch. They really put Villanova away doing that when they're humming. It looks great. And yeah, I want the A-10 to be a multi-bid league. There's still a chance if, you know, St. Joe's, Dayton, maybe St. Bonaventure goes on an absolute tear in league play, and you've got those teams kind of clustered near the top with, you know, 1-3 league losses each, then maybe we've got a shot. But yeah, it's been a little bit better of a non-conference stretch for the top teams this year to some years past. But yeah, it's going to be key to avoid those quad four losses that you're going to have opportunities to take during league play.
Right. And like you said, that there is the opportunity for it. They just need to keep on winning these final non-conference games before we really get into the thick of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Not unlike Oklahoma. It's like, don't take any losses that we'll have to talk about on Selection Sunday. Unfortunately, they already have one, but
yeah,
you know, they've, I think that is pretty far in the rearview mirror at this point. Since, you know, they've played very well, won their last five, could argue should have been their last six if they were able to hold on against Kentucky, but that at least is a loss that won't be held against them.
Right.
Yeah. My last one was, we talked about him last week, but I mean, just, again, prove it year, Brad Brunell.
Yeah.
The man's delivering. Maybe Porter Moser is finding that same juice. Maybe we'll have kind of similar conversations. Brad Brunell just needs some deeper tournament runs to really make it stick. He's won games in the tournament before. We talked about Joe Girard, big pickup previously. And then the Palmetto Bowl beating South Carolina, previously undefeated, and following that up with another win over a good, maybe not great, TCU team. So at the very least, two high major wins, two Power Six wins, and it's obviously good that you have a solid 1-2 punch in PJ Hall, Joe Girard, but there's a lot of balance here too. All five starters in double figures against South Carolina, and I don't know, they're just a really solid team. They don't really jump off the page at you and don't really look like they do anything at an elite level, but it's going to be a bit of a continuation of what has happened in past years in the ACC. I don't think it's going to be that great of a league. So Clemson has as good a chance as anyone to win it at this point in the season with what they've shown, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the biggest key is their balance. Like you said, offensively, they have balance across their starting five. They get decent punch off their bench, but they're not solely reliant on the offensive side of the ball or the defense. They're top 32 in both. They're 32nd in defense, which is why I cherry picked the number, 27th in offensive efficiency per KenPom. So, like, they can hang their hat on either side of the floor. If they're in a tight, push it out, possession by possession game with Virginia, they can play that way. If they're going up and down with North Carolina, they can play that way too. They have the opportunity and the ability to do both. It's just what side of the ball do they need to be firing on that day? And when they're firing on both, they're very hard to beat.
Absolutely. That was my last winner. Do you have anyone else?
I have two quick shout outs. One is Indiana State. The Sycamores, 9-1, have played very well. Their sole loss is to Alabama. They've got solid wins over Illinois programs, Bradley, Southern, and Northern Illinois. They score a ton of points, 88.5 points a game. They are top 20 in assists per game, and they have, five guys that average double figures, including Isaiah Swope, their star guard, averaging nearly 20 a game, shooting as a team 52% from the field and 41% from three. They are a ton of fun to watch, and they have Robbie Avila, who's a local kid for us here in Chicago.
I didn't realize he was from Oak Forest. I have been watching some Robbie Avila mixtapes. I'm not gonna lie to you. He is the quintessential, like, great college player that I'm so excited to see more of, and really hope that Indiana State makes it to the big dance and really gets some national shine.
He's got a lot of Cam Crutwig about him, like, just with the ability to stretch the floor.
Cam Crutwig, a Tanner Groves type of guy. Saw some people calling him a Jokic type, and in a little sense of the word, I will agree, because he gets off the bus, you're not thinking much, but right. Then he can still go by you. He can, as you said, stretch the floor. He can rebound, obviously, 6'10 guy, and he can pass really well out of the post or from the point. So it's an interesting look that, I mean, not many teams can really, really throw at you. That's a big part of why the Sycamores have been able to be successful so far. I hope there is a big dance appearance for the Sycamores this year. And I mean, it's good when the Valley is deeper. Indiana State hasn't really had too many great seasons recently, but the way they're playing to start the season has been very impressive. And if they can kind of challenge, you know, the likes of Drake, and they already got a win against Bradley, didn't they? That's Bradley is the standard bearer last year, and that, you know, the last couple of years. So Indiana State's already proven it can belong in the conference. And this is a good call out. Since a team that's been a lot of fun can really score well.
They got a game at Michigan State coming up too, which, man, oh man, it could not be a better time to catch
talk
the Spartans.
About Michigan State, yeah.
We will. My last shout out though is Texas A&M's first half against DePaul, 62 points, 2.1 points per possession in an absolutely dominating half and win over the Blue Demons. The best tweet was simply explaining what it means to give up 2.1 points per possession, and it is that if DePaul had just given up open, uncontested layups the entire half, their defense would have been better than what they had played in that game. I think The other crazy stat is that DePaul shot 55% from the field and 50 from three and still lost this game by 25 points.
Yeah, that's honestly hard to imagine. It's easy to quantify.
Yes,
as you did so eloquently, but yeah, that's like allegedly trying your hardest, and you would be better served to just
not try at all.
Give up layup lines. Yeah, that's tough. But yeah, I mean, obviously that's a bad DePaul stat, but you also do have to give credit to Texas A&M for
right.
Hitting threes.
Exactly.
That's how you get to the 2.1.
So that is all I had, if you would like to parlay us into losers.
Okay. Well, there's a couple opportunities off of what we just talked about. I'll start mm-hmm. with the Michigan State one. I'll get to the other one I think you're thinking of. But
yeah,
Michigan State is, to put it bluntly, I did not see this come in. And at this point, I think it is a little bit of stubbornness from Tom Izzo to just not play very good. Like this is a Roy Williams, Walker Kessler situation. Not saying Xavier Booker is on this level, but also where is he? Why are we not able to find minutes for this guy when you look at the output from your alleged centers on your roster that is just not getting the job done? I don't think there's a world in which you can tell me that these are better options than what we have on the bench. Sissoko is just completely disappeared from what was, you know, it had some good stretches at times. Carson Cooper, sure, he's a nice guy, not giving you anything off the bench. And those are the two primary bigs you're using. That was why you went out and signed a prospect like Xavier Booker. And I haven't seen or heard anything about injuries. I legitimately think it's only Tom Izzo trying to bring freshmen along slowly. Jeremy Fears not getting a ton of run either. He was the other big signing from that class. And I think you got to shake it up. This is another 0-2 week, lost to Wisconsin, lost to Nebraska. They are now dead last in what is a bad Big Ten with no light at the end of the tunnel, because Saturday they've got Baylor, and that could be ugly because the backcourt has not been super consistent either, and that is what Baylor does very, very well. So it's panic button time for me with Michigan State for sure.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think you hit on a couple of the key points. Their bigs just don't provide anything consistently, like Tyson Walker and what else? AJ Hogard has regressed from last season. He's not scoring the ball efficiently. He's not really scoring the ball that much. He's turning the ball over more. He is not doing the other things that they need him to do as a facilitator offensively. I think Malik Hall's a fine player. He is not the guy, though. And I think that's what Tom Izzo and Michigan State have been hoping for this year. He is where he is right now, like a 10 or 11 point a game, 5 to 7 rebounds, and maybe a couple big points. He is not the guy that's going to be in your face, stuff in the stat sheet. That's just not how he plays. And that's really what they're missing, because at this point, like, you add all their forwards together and they barely average 12 rebounds a game. It's bad news, especially for a team that shoots it as poorly as they do, from both the free throw line, 68%, and 29.5%. Like, there's just so many glaring issues that it is shocking that there isn't more of a trial by fire for these freshmen, because it can't be worse than what they're getting, right? And if it is,
right,
then you just go right back to what you had.
Yeah, especially for a team, a program like Michigan State that consistently, regardless of who's on the roster, is always near the top of rebounding stats, whether it's
right.
just pure counting stats, rebounding percentage. Izzo usually has a very tough team, very hard-nosed teams that will fight for anything. We're not seeing that right now. And yeah, I mean, Malik Hall, a couple years ago, was this team's leading scorer, but more than anything, that was used as an indictment of this team does not have any star players, because he was still right around 10, 11 points per game. And that's just who he is. He's fine as a, fourth option maybe. But if this team wants to be all it can be, like, you need a guy like Joey Hauser, as we saw last year. That's somebody they definitely miss right now, because he can hit jump shots, and outside of Tyson Walker, no one really can. Like, we looked at James Madison game one. It's a 1-for-21. It's like, this is an aberration. This is horrible, but they're going to figure it out, right?
Right. There's no way we'll see this again.
Yeah. They're still under 30% for the year, which is rapidly approaching the Indiana zone, which is not a place you want to be. I am here to tell you, but it's bad. Give Xavier Booker some run. Like, you have to, like, you can't. Tom Izzo's been doing this long enough that while he is stubborn and wants to give older players minutes, pretty clear this isn't working. You gotta try something else.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. This feels like a game they beat Baylor and they catch him. Baylor doesn't shoot well, and then all of a sudden Michigan State hits a couple shots and everyone goes back and says, you know what, this team is back, they're good again. Let's not forget they were preseason top five. It's okay. Like, well, they'll figure it out, and then they fall apart again.
I don't know, maybe, but I thought that's what the Wisconsin game would be.
Yeah.
Wisconsin playing pretty well, just coming off a big win over Marquette. We've got them at home, opportunity to make a statement. Nope. Just going to let Stephen Kral just rain threes on us all day.
Yeah.
The other big one I had, Louisville. It's time. It's been time, but it's definitely time. Kenny Payne in the Toilet Bowl comes into Winchester Arena, loses to DePaul by 7. Honestly, this game was not particularly close for long stretches of it. And this is a DePaul team we have been very hard on for good reason. They had won one game all season coming in. They had made the likes of Northern Illinois look like world beaters. And then Louisville very kindly did the same for them. Louisville still can't shoot. I think they were 5-for-19 from 3 in this game. They went out and got the likes of Sky Clark, but, you know, trading that for L. Ellis, you kind of need to have both and then still more in the backcourt for that to make any sort of sustainable difference. I don't think there's anything Kenny Payne can do. Not that there really was much before, but I don't think there's really anything he can do to get a year three. There was a little bit of a, not even a dead cat bounce, but some sort of life that they showed in New York whilst losing both games. I think part of that is due to Texas not as good as we might have thought they were. They're clearly maybe not as bad as last year, but any progress is minimal at best. So it's going to be another very, very long rest of the season if you cannot beat this version of DePaul.
Yeah, DePaul led by as many as 19 in this game. It was 16 at the half, 38-22. Really just a horrible game overall that 4,255 alleged sickos attended. So credit to them. Barely 41% capacity at Wintrust Arena. It's time. It's time at Louisville, like you said. I don't know where you go, but Chris Mack got fired for less, and you can't, like, Kenny Payne has shown nothing that gives you confidence that he's going to turn it around. The other part of this game that is maybe a little understated is that DePaul, when they did their head coaching search, the firm they used came down with two names for them to make their final decision. And those two names were Tony Stubblefield and Kenny Payne. So this was the DePaul Bowl for sure. And with any luck, you never wish for a man to lose his job, but with any luck, both of these guys will be searching again, because it's frankly unacceptable for both of them at these programs. But it's outrageous right now what we had to watch, and they should have to play each other annually until one of these two teams figures it out.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a Champions Classic. Let's go for the the other end of the spectrum.
Right.
You know, just consistently bottom feeding Power Six teams. Let's get Georgetown in there and somebody else I'm not thinking of right now. But yeah, that was a new low. You couldn't think that there was one Kenny Payne would be able to find.
Yeah.
Who else did you have as a loser?
I need an open space to go on a tangent about Seton Hall basketball because it's a disgrace right now.
All right. Plain I'll turn simple. My mic off.
They've lost four of their last five. They have not beaten a Power Six opponent. They have lost to USC, who we've already said is not that good. We have lost to Iowa, who we've already talked about as being not that good. They've lost to Baylor, who is very good, but they were pretty non-competitive for a vast majority of that game. They did cut it to three in the second half, but that was about it. And then this Saturday, a home game against a wounded animal in Rutger, who has played poorly throughout the season. They, being Seton Hall, just laid an absolute egg. They shoot 3 of 20 from three. Alamir Dawes is 3 of 15 from three and 3 of 16 from the floor. He has been an absolute disgrace this season. Rutgers shoots 12 of 24 from three. They are also a horrible three-point shooting team, so a little luck, little whatever you want to call it there. But they were, plain and simple, a tougher team that day, and Seton Hall didn't deserve to win it. The problem, and there are many, is that right now there are two reliable players on this team. Alamir Dawes is a traffic cone on defense and a walking liability on offense. He cannot shoot the ball. He turns it over at an alarming rate, and every shot he takes is a bad shot. Even the ones that go in are bad shots, plain and simple. They shoot the three at less than 30%, which we already talked about with Michigan State. That is a huge, huge problem in modern college basketball. You cannot do much when you're playing that way offensively. They have had games. Let's see, where's the total? Cliff Amarui had 7 blocks in this game. He has been horrible this year. He has been absolutely horrible this year for Rutgers. USC, they had, where is this guy? Joshua Morgan had 10 blocks. Seton Hall gets blocked more than any team I have ever seen in my entire life. It is remarkable the rate at which this team gets its shot blocked. Now, let's go further into the roster. Dylan Adewusu has been a massive disappointment. 7 points a game, nothing really on the defensive end. He's averaging 2 steals, but really isn't doing a ton. He's shooting the ball horrifically. He looks like he has no confidence. I don't know what has happened to this guy. Dre Davis, while averaging 12.5 points a game, disappears for 25 minutes a night. It is remarkable that he can do that and still manage to put that many points. The only bright spots, Jane Bediako is very good, the Santa Clara transfer. He has played with incredible energy. He's seemed to pick up the pace and the physicality really well, and he is polished on the offensive end. Kadari Richmond is playing at a level of not only all Big East, but consideration for All-American. He is this entire team, and if he had any teammates, he'd probably be averaging 6 or 7 assists a game right now. 15.5 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 50% field goal percentage from the field, and 82% from the free throw line. His 3-point numbers are not great, but he really hasn't taken that many. Last year, he shot the three really well. He's getting into the lane at will and getting easy shots. This should be so easy for this team to play well, and they just have not figured it out. I don't know what Shaheen Holloway is doing, but he needs to figure it the fuck out fast, because people will lose patience. And even if he is the prodigal son, everyone can overstay their welcome. Not saying he's on the hot seat by any stretch of the imagination, but we need to see progress. Kevin Willard did not leave this program in bad shape, and we have taken massive steps back. End rant.
So, at this point, where do you see this team fitting in with the rest of the Big East? Because right now, record-wise, they're on the same level as Georgetown. I would suspect you think that they're a better team than that, provided that some things that may or may not change.
I'm, I'm worried. They're playing Monmouth right now. If they don't win this game by 20, I'd be shocked. Missouri, I think, is actually a good litmus test because I think Missouri is very much on our level right now, and that's not a good level to be. If they can win that game in a pseudo away environment in Kansas City, that'll calm me down a little bit. I think no matter what, you're going to get some of those good efforts against higher quality Big East teams. It's just shocking that we haven't seen it in the non-conference yet. Like, you will, I'm not saying they're going to beat UConn again this year, but you will see games where they are in it with a UConn, or I don't even know if I can say Marquette, because I think Marquette just matches up with us really well, like a Providence. I think they can beat a Providence. That said, if this team finishes any higher than eighth, I would be thrilled. I don't see a world in which they finish higher than that, because all it takes is one team to get hot from three, or one team to have a guy that scores the ball. Like, Jaden Epps can score on Georgetown, and if he puts up 30, I don't know who's matching that for us.
It's true. Jaden Epps was the star of the, I don't know if it was the charity exhibition or secret scrimmage where he scored like 45 and also single-handedly beat American. That was a ridiculous game from him too. But Georgetown is definitely more of a threat than they've been in years past. But I feel you. It's not a fun place to be.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Do you want to transition away?
Yeah, I mean, I'll love to talk shit about St. John's, because now I have the opportunity to.
There you go.
After getting a lot of shit from St. John's fans, they go out and lose to a bad Boston College team. They give up 86 points. I think the worst part of it all, though, is Rick Pitino just trashing his team in the postgame. He is talking about, we don't have the right personnel and players. He kept one guy from last year's team. That's Joel Soriano. Everyone else he told to get lost. He brought in everyone that's there. Him complaining about this is just like looking in the mirror and saying, you caused all my problems. What the hell is wrong with you? And instead, he's just throwing his team under the bus. To his credit, though, he's right. This team cannot defend anybody. They are horrible on that end of the ball, but they can score. And so they're going to be in some track meets. They're going to be in some high-scoring games. If they can't defend, they're going to have a hard time in the Big East, because teams like Marquette and Creighton will put 115 points if they have to, because they are built for that. Providence can score as well. Butler's surprisingly well to start this season. I don't know if they have that scoring capability. They did just score 100 points the other day, although it was overtime. But like, there are talented teams that will take advantage of that. If they don't defend, they will be stuck near the bottom of the league with Seton Hall.
Yeah, they have no interest in defending. They did for basically half of a half against North Texas after the initial Pitino explosion after the loss to Michigan.
Also not a good team.
Yeah, and then that, I guess, got boring. They're back to old habits, gave up 88 to Dayton, gave up over 80 to Utah in one, and then Boston College, 86. So, yeah, they are who we thought they were. This is just going to be, they're going to have to try to outscore people, but they do not have the personnel to outscore a lot of the teams they play, which presents problems and will cause Rick Pitino to blow several gaskets this year. Because we saw what Marquette did against a team like Kansas, just absolutely dice them up. Like, Kansas is a good basketball team. St. John's comes out with the same sort of intensity or lack thereof that they often do that could get ugly in a hurry. So there's got to be more than to defense than just kind of hoping and praying your opponent misses shots. But no one has really told the St. John's players yet. I assume Rick Pitino has, but it very clearly has not sank in.
You would hope.
Yeah.
You would hope he has, other than going into the media and saying it. But yeah, it's if there's any bright spot to this season, it's that St. John's doesn't look good. I don't know. Like, I honestly couldn't care less about them at this point. It's just a walking disaster at Seton Hall.
Yeah. So, yeah, good times in the Big East. Yeah. The last team I had was Miami, who is just the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde team this year, it seems like. They're solid, but when they start to fall behind, they just unravel quicker than any other team I've seen that I actually would care to watch. Their two losses this year, the Kentucky game was an absolute massacre. They followed that up against Colorado, who's a solid team, but one that Miami should reasonably compete with. They lose 90-63. Tristan Da Silva has a, I don't think he ever finished it. He was close to a triple-double. But in any event, just, I am concerned seeing a team coached by Jim Larrañaga just kind of spiral out of control like this. It's obviously a lot of the same team from last year. So this is pretty unexpected, but
yeah,
I don't know. Just the way that both Colorado and Kentucky was just on an all-time tear, just absolutely dicing up Miami. And, you know, previously I would have said, like I did with Clemson, that, you know, Miami is probably one of those teams that has the inside track in the ACC. But again, like St. John's, they do not have any interest in defending right now. And
yeah,
it concerns me because, like, I would have taken last year's Miami team over Virginia by about 25. But if you're not playing defense, Virginia is, and they will just suffocate the life out of you. I wouldn't have confidence in Miami against, you know, Clemson, Virginia, maybe even Duke. I'll go that far. I have confidence against Louisville because, you know, we gotta call a spade a spade. But North Carolina should give them a lot of trouble right now too, with the way that Davis and Cadeau are playing together on the perimeter. But yeah, that's a major red flag early for a team that was not necessarily anticipating to see that from.
Yeah, it's almost like they've been solved, even though they've done the same thing since Jim Larrañaga's been around, like four guards with one not even that big man who kind of just manhandles people on the glass. And like, I think they're more athletic than they've been in the past. Matthew Cleveland adds a nice mix of height and athleticism to that roster, but I don't know. They like you said, they just have no interest in defending anyone right now, and they really just want to outscore everybody. They're also really inefficient with the ball on offense. They turn it over almost 14 times a game, but defensively is the biggest issue. They don't block shots at all, so that really hurts them on the interior. And I think if you just find ways to get inside, you're going to have a good game. And we saw that with Da Silva for Colorado. So if it's not Wuga Popler scoring, they really have struggled a bit this year.
Yeah, they definitely miss having the length of someone like Isaiah Wong on the perimeter too. But yeah, like,
yeah.
Also, you turn it over 20 times against Colorado. That's really not going to do yourself any favors either. But yeah, it's a rough start. But they'll hang around, I think. Probably on the they'll probably be in and out of the top 25 all season. Probably a little more out than in. But yeah, like so far, just they do not seem to be on the same level of teams that we expect to make the tournament when they've played them so far.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll stick in Florida. This is my last one as well. Florida State, bad home loss to South Florida by 16 after losses to Georgia and North Carolina. They do have that win over Colorado. But again, this is another, when they're playing good teams, they aren't playing well kind of moment. And you do have to worry as they get into ACC play where they're going to pick up these wins. You can kind of look at the bottom of the league, the Louisville, Notre Dame, same list you went through for Miami and say, okay, we should feel confident. I don't know that this team has it. So there's a lot out there that Florida State needs to figure out. Offensively, they have struggled. Defensively, they are not the same team that we have seen in years past. It's just got to figure out these rotations and get guys that can score more than just a couple points every night, because they've got two guys averaging 10 or more a game and everyone else is, again, deep bench per usual, but everyone else is kind of in that 4, 5, 6 range, and you need a guy that can just come in, provide a spurt off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, they could use a guy like Matthew Cleveland. That South Florida results was maybe the most surprising result of Saturday, because that was a South Florida team that, again, call a spade, not particularly good at basketball. And they were in control for seemingly that whole game. I mean, if Florida State does not win a transfer war for Jameer Watkins from VCU, they would be in even worse shape, which is hard to think about. It's, you know, Ham's teams have kind of been slipping the last couple of seasons. I'm not going to blame COVID, but certainly didn't help with the momentum they were on that year of winning the ACC tournament and all that comes with that. They got a little bump early in the season beating the aforementioned Colorado Buffaloes, but they have lost that and then some. It's a team and a program that really prides itself on defense, but even the best overly physical Florida State teams had several guys who could score, especially from the perimeter. They do not have that right now. It's just a lot of front court players. There's really not a lot of kind of leadership or scoring ability in the backcourt. And I mean, that's just, you can't win in major college basketball like that. Especially in the present age. Like, it's great to have a Zach Edey or Hunter Dickinson, but you have to surround them with other good players because they can't be the ones walking the ball up the court.
Right.
All right. That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next time talking all basketball all the time. So we'll see you then.